of special teaming it up all during the week.
Patrick Manily.
My all-time favorite Bear would have to be Patrick Manily.
Bears long snapper for 16 seasons.
Pat Manily, the long snapper, Maynard, put it in position, and Robbie Gold sends the Bears to the NFC Championship game.
The longest tenured player in Chicago Bears history.
One of the things I immediately missed the most was eating lunch in Dean Pope's office. Olin Kruitz, Roberto Garza, Patrick Manley. We never talk football. We talk trash.
Craft beer mogul.
Are you drinking the Kool-Aid?
I'm drinking a long snapper IPA.
Patrick Manley.
It's a little different morning. We're thrown off a little bit. Imagine my shock that you guys can go on without me with the phone pregame show. That's shocking.
I know. It's a struggle, man. It's a real struggle.
Hey. I'm not happy you guys sound so good. You know what I mean? Like, it's like that. You remember when you would get hurt and somebody would go in and you're acting like you're cheering for them and you're really not?
Yep. 100%
with you guys this morning.
100%.
Patrick Manley with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
We've been hoping that we could have a conversation with Patrick Manley, considering the goings on of the Chicago Bears. And at first, as the game's going on, you're going, oh, well, this is just going to be great. We'll talk with Patrick about the team being 4-2. And then you realize the long snapper got hurt, and Cole Kmet went in there and did an admirable job. So admirable of a job did Cole Kmet do, he was named Special Teams Player of the Week.
I mean, never has a long snapper had a good enough week to win this award. Never won, Pat? I thought maybe Trey Junkin, but not him, not Pat Manley. How is this possible, dude?
Or not.
Yeah, Pat's on mute.
That's all right. We'll get him off of mute.
Pat, you're muted, brother. You're muted.
Pat, you're muted. Pat, keep talking.
Patrick, you're muted.
Yeah. Bilal, you there, man? All right.
It's okay.
Who mute? It's my first time on Zoom. Sorry, guys.
It's all right. We were saying, like, I covered
this mute button is so huge. You got to get that mute button turned on.
No, I heard you guys. I covered, you just couldn't hear me.
16 years of Patrick Manley doing everything he could to help the Bears win, and not once were you named Special Teams Player of the Week. So, are you happy or are you mad that Cole Kmet, in a backup role, got that honor?
Well, Brad Biggs called me today when I was on the golf course, and he said he told me the news, and I guess my reaction was, that's funny as hell, because I was a little confused. I'm like, wait a second, he really got Special Teams Player of the Week? I understand what he did was great for the team, and he did an okay job and all that kind of stuff, but I'm going to put my old player hat on here and stand up for my other guys. There had to be other guys in the league who did something bigger and better than that. Let's just say this. Daniel Hardy, who caused the fumble for the Bears, right? If they recover that, he caused the fumble, and say he had two tackles as well, is that more impactful of a game, of a special teams game, as being a special teamer? No, but this really got – what he did was great. He did a nice job. I'll give him that. But I do think that's the NFL just kind of patting him on the back and raising up that what he did a little bit. And I do think there are some guys in the league that are like, wait a minute. I had three tackles, caused a fumble, or whatever my return average was. He came in and did, what, six snaps? Five of them pretty good. One of them, he was part of the problem on the block. I got on him last night on his podcast.
Good.
So I was on there, and I just gave an honest breakdown. We had a good time doing it. But, it's a neat thing he did, but I don't think truly he deserved being Special Teams Player of the Week. And that's just me putting my old-timer grumpy old special teams hat on.
I love that you went on his pod and gave him the business on that, because that's outstanding. So what award were you eligible for? You know, was there anything that you could have won, Pat, on the weekend?
No, well, we were always up for that, but here's what I wanted to do each week. And Dave Tobe did a great job of making our room super, super competitive. We always had a point system. So every week you had a point system of number of blocks you had, tackles you had. We ended up adding successful snaps. Kicks over 40 yards for Robbie. So everybody kind of got on equal footing for the point system. And you wanted to come in Monday and be one of the top three point getters. So that was my goal each week, was trying to get that. There was a few times that I did get the point total lead or whatever for the week. So that was the only thing I was vying for. But now maybe long snappers have a chance to win it after Cole put us on the map, that if they do recognize a player having maybe two or three tackles as a long snapper and all successful snaps, then maybe he deserves it.
Yeah. Well, how would you say he did, and what things did he do correctly as a long snapper?
All right. I broke him down here. I got him right here in front of me. We can do, you want to go through the all six snaps?
Hell yeah.
This is what I told him last night. I said, great job coming in there and doing all that stuff. But I was really upset with his, he just did a little fist pump after the first one. He scores touchdowns, right? And does the baseball swing. Don't you think you'd be more excited after having a successful snap and scoring a touchdown that he deserved a baseball swing? And he laughed like, and he goes, yeah, I was nervous as hell or whatever. I'm like, well, deserve your baseball swing. But he did a good job overall. They all just got a little bit higher. And I told him, you look like you got too comfortable. Like it got too easy for you. So each one got higher and higher. And then finally I got him about the, he was great too, by the way. He's literally leaning in on the Zoom call. This kid must be very coachable because he was listening to every word. And I was like, I'm just kind of having fun here, but he was really listening and kind of taking mental notes. And then I got on him on the last one. I go, you got to help Karan in the A-gap, man. You got to snap and lean to the overload side because that's where the little block came through. But and he's sitting there shaking his head. He's like, all right. I'm like, Cole, you're probably never doing it again, so don't worry about it.
That is outstanding. We're with Patrick Manley here. So, look, they signed a backup long snapper. They signed this guy, Jake McQuaid. The
Pro Bowler.
Yeah, former Lions long snapper, a two-time Pro Bowler to the practice squad. Because you can't have Cole Kmet doing this in practice, right? So at the very least, you're doing that. Is Jake McQuaid on the Patrick Manley long snapper tree, like Scott Daly was?
No, he's not.
He's not. Well, does he have a chance to make this team? How's your boy Scott doing in this regard?
Well, I guess what we know is that the MRI came back better than what they thought. So I do think he has a chance, and I hope he does. I talked to him a little bit. He's excited. There isn't major damage, so that's the biggest part. So we'll see if he can heal up in 2 weeks. Yeah, there we go. Thanks. Salute it.
Yeah, we'll salute major damage.
Yes.
Yeah. Dave Tobe's point system is awesome. You've shared about that before, and mm-hmm. It's like this team, Pat, the way that this team talks about each other, the way that they talk about each other's role, the way that they celebrate. I mean, Caleb's celebrating Cole Kmet's long snap, you know? DJ suggesting on the bus to the players, you better get Cole this play on the good side of the 50, maybe even the 40. You give him a chance to score on it. Like, them wanting good things for each other. The vibes are good, are they not?
You're the major of of good vibes, aren't you? Salute.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, they are. It just seems that way, that it's all the way across the board from, like you just said, special teams to defense to offense. And that's what winning does. And I got to give credit to Ryan Poles as well. It seems like he's built a locker room of guys that, you know, want to play with each other. There's nobody sitting out there that's, you know, kind of a, you know, just a bad guy or whatever that's trying to fit into that team. It seems like everybody is on the same page, and hopefully they can keep this winning streak going. But that's what winning does, and it's cool to see. And that's how you just kind of keep, you know, I always talk about momentum, and I truly believe in that, that you go in and practice a little harder. You do a little bit more for each other. You spend more time in the weight room, the training room, anything you need to get done. Maybe this off season, this bye week, they're spending a little bit more time in self-scout. You know, they're not there in the building, but maybe coach gave them I've had bye weeks before. We had a couple days off, and you had to go study yourself and come back and give a report card of yourself, what you need to work on. Maybe they're doing that with those guys and they take it a little more serious because they are on the hunt right now.
Cole said it on his show. He said it in the post game about the terror of having your name called. We lived through that, Patrick. How scared was Des Clark when he had to do it?
Thank God it was only in the preseason. We talked quite a bit. It's not fun. It's you know, that's not what they do. They might have done it in high school, but they don't do it during the week. Like I put a tweet out that I guarantee you every backup long snapper in the NFL this week is working on it now Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and they're probably going to bring him out. Some teams will start bringing the guy out for the pregame practice. Most of the time, you don't bring that guy out. You let him stay with the tight end unit, the O-line unit, or whatever. But I bet this week a few of the guys will do that. And then I reached out to Greg Olson as well, because he had to do a couple snaps in the preseason when he was with us. And he reminded me, it was when I was a little bit older, that he's like, yeah, you just needed to take a break because you got old. So he had to go in and do like two or three snaps. And I think one of them was against the Cleveland Browns, and Joshua Cribbs returned a preseason touchdown against them. And he vividly remembers that, but he was giving me he was ribbing me a little bit for not being able to finish a preseason game because I was old. But that's all right.
Oh, my God. That's tremendous. I love that you still have these contacts around the league and touch base with them. When you do so, is the league-wide optimism on the Bears akin to what we feel in this town, Patrick?
Yeah, and it all goes back to Caleb, and a lot of times they're really asking me, is the kid real? You know, because they're not watching as much as we are, as I am, and my answer is yes. I really think he is, and that's, you know, I've talked to you before that if you have a top seven quarterback, you have a chance to win every game in this NFL, and he's working his way up there quickly, a lot quicker than I thought he would. But, yeah, everybody is on board, and once I tell them that I think Caleb is the real deal, they always talk about our defense and how good the defense is. So everybody's got the positive vibes. Let's go back to vibes, the positive vibes about these Bears, and that's all the way across the league and former players and everybody else I talk to.
What did your tape breakdown tell you about how well Caleb did?
Again, just the progress of him, the game slowing down. He was jittery in week one, and each game he just seems like he sees the game. It's just slowing down. He's that quarterback now that once he gets under center, he knows either this or this is going to happen. He can recognize blitzes. He can recognize coverages. He does it really quick. He does it calmly. He also now is using the cadence even better. He's still kind of screwing up on sending guys in motion a little bit, but that's to be understood, being this young in his career. But it just, to me, the accelerated learning curve of that kind of Matrix-esque feeling of a quarterback where they just kind of know what's going on in front of them and everything slows down. It's just really neat to watch. And I think Kurt Warner was talking about it during the broadcast, just looking at his eyes, seeing his eyes watch the field and understand it doesn't look like there's panic in there. We've had a lot of quarterbacks come through here the last few years, and you see panic pre-snap, and I just don't see that.
Wow, that's good stuff. Like the accelerated development and the Matrix-like feeling that a good quarterback has. And if it is a top seven quarterback, then it changes everything. This offensive line has looked better, but how much of that is due to the chemistry and symmetry with Caleb, who for the most part is getting the ball out quicker, among other things?
Yeah, let's go with the run game. I think that's helping them out quite a bit too. I think they figured out what they're good at. I like the fact that Matt Pryor is now putting his hand in the ground in the run game, and him and Darnell Wright are moving people off the ball. And then to back to the pass protection, it's a lot to do with who they're going against the last 2 weeks. They really have not had anybody up the middle that has caused them problems like they did earlier in the year. They did a nice job on the edge. There's still some improvement that needs to be done on the outside. They had a nice game plan of helping the chip a little bit and move Caleb out of the pocket. But to me, this O-line, what they've gone against, they've done what they're supposed to do, but I'm really nervous about, you know, a much better D-line like we saw earlier in the year if they truly have taken that step forward to help Caleb.
Patrick, as always, we appreciate your expertise and your breakdown on everything. Have a good rest of your day. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, we'll see you guys.
Patrick, thanks. There's a massive piece of baseball news, and the headline is one thing. The subtext is quite another, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I've been... No disrespect to Patrick. I've been texting while we were having our segment with Patrick, and I actually have something from someone from the White Sox who reacted to it.
Good, because this story demands the working of every possible source we can. So that's good stuff.
This could be major news about the White Sox, or it could be nothing, but we'll share it with you and let you figure it out next here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes show flashback.
I'm going to couch this so nobody writes that I thought of selling. friends of mine have said, why don't you sell? Why don't you get out? And my answer always has been, I like what I'm doing, as bad as it is. And what else would I do? I'm a boring guy. I don't play golf. I don't play bridge. What else would I do? And I want to make it better. I want to make it better before I go.
You know, the thing is, Lawrence Holmes, and you're listening to Spiegel and Holmes, we've got huge Jerry Reinsdorf news that is out about the White Sox. There is a big part of Jerry that really does love this team and love the organization and wants to make it better before he goes. So that's why some of these rumors kind of fit with an idea of selling a certain way, if indeed that is actually true. Tell people what's up.
Well, Aaron, Let's catch people up here. Brittany Giroli of The Athletic in the New York Times has a story that is up right now. Jerry Reinsdorf open to selling White Sox, sources say. And it goes on to talk about his history as White Sox owner and that we are now at a point where Reinsdorf may want to sell. I'll give you a couple of paragraphs here. Longtime majority owner Jerry Reinsdorf is open to selling the Chicago White Sox. Sources briefed on the matter but not authorized to discuss it publicly told The Athletic. The 88-year-old Reinsdorf is in active discussions with a group led by former big leaguer Dave Stewart. Reinsdorf led a group that bought the White Sox for roughly $20 million in 1981 and is the second longest active owner in MLB, trailing only the Steinbrenner family, who bought the Yankees in 1973. According to Forbes, Reinsdorf owns an estimated 19% of the White Sox, all of which are believed to be part of potential sale discussions. Reinsdorf is the second owner in a week to publicly explore a path to selling. The Poland family, who owns the Minnesota Twins since, who's owned the Minnesota Twins since 1984, announced on Thursday plans to explore selling the team. Reached separately by The Athletic, Reinsdorf and Stewart both declined to comment.
So we have known that Jerry Reinsdorf's heirs, his kids, have been going around and collecting as many shares as they
minority shares as they could
possibly collect. And the assumption has been that once Jerry passes, that his kids would sell the White Sox. So as the story goes on to say, this does indeed represent a significant change for Reinsdorf, the oldest majority owner in baseball. He's shown no public interest in selling the team, at least not as long as he was around as majority owner. It's unclear what, if anything, changed, though Reinsdorf has been vocal about making significant organizational operational changes amid a season in which the team lost a record 121 games. And we know all about the committee that Chris Getz put in place with the former Navy SEAL, and how they looked all around the organization and have now, like, they've suggested myriad changes. And Tanny, you sent me the thing from over the weekend, or I guess a couple weekends ago, where they fired a bunch of the scouting staff in the Dominican Republic and in Latin America. This after getting rid of the head of their international scouting team. So they're undergoing massive changes, and it does. So in that sense, it's possible that Jerry was brought some suggestions and he was like, you know, why don't I just sell now? That possibility exists.
Well, you could also add in what's happening with CHSN
right now. Absolutely.
You could add that in and say, do I really want to put up with this type of headache? And I know that I can trust Michael with the Bulls. That part is taken care of. I don't have to worry about that. He can run that. This was the worst year I've ever had as a baseball owner. This was the worst year that a team has had in the modern era of baseball. Do I want to spend the rest of my life trying to chase out of this hole that we've dug in?
Mm-hmm. And to your point about CHSN, Sports Channel, going all the way back, I mean, the RSN, the Regional Sports Network business, has always been a big and lucrative part of Jerry Reinsdorf's portfolio.
And now it's more difficult than ever.
That entire model is breaking down. The system is dying. You don't have to be paying a lot of attention to realize, was it 14 teams just let loose by Bally's a couple of months ago?
15.
Might even be 15 teams, and three of them have already signed on with MLB for them to produce their broadcast. So that means 10 or 11 of them are still just out there in the wilderness trying to figure it out. The CHSN stuff locally is a headache. So it's an excellent point, Lawrence, that you could add in the CHSN battle to, we need to make big changes. Didn't we already just make big changes with Rick? You could feel an older man, an owner, going, I think it's time. Is that indeed the case, though?
When Dave Stewart was hired as GM of the Diamondbacks in 2014, do you know who Dave Stewart hired as chief baseball officer?
Tony La Russa. Yeah, he's
a
La Russa guy.
More of the same. This is not Jerry trying to offload the White Sox because he doesn't want to do it. This is Jerry offloading the White Sox to one of his people.
The Dave Stewart connection is massive here for a couple of reasons. One, that you just stated, Shane, this is an insular relationship. He is a crony. He is part of the cronies. But what Dave Stewart has been doing the last 3 years, I think it is trying desperately to put together a minority-led group to bring baseball to Nashville. working with MLB on expansion. He tried to buy the Oakland A's with his partner, Lonnie Murray, of I think it's Sports Management Partners is the company.
And they want to do an NWSL team in Nashville.
So selling this to Dave Stewart, if that is indeed the way it's going, could be looked at as just the first step in the White Sox being moved to Nashville. There's a lot going on here.
It also fits very comfortably with the public image of Jerry Reinsdorf being someone that's been ahead of the curve when it comes to minority hiring in baseball, which was kind of the disappointing part of the Chris Getz hire, that it was just so insular and there wasn't really a search for a general manager when Reinsdorf's at least recent history of owning, that was something that he took a lot of pride in. The idea that you have this black general manager, this Venezuelan manager that ended up succeeding. And now it doesn't feel as great, but it would fit with what Reinsdorf has been publicly billed as being someone who cares about these types of movements in baseball.
And to that point, Lawrence, it's a complicated man.
100%.
It is a man who is beloved by tons and tons of people because of his loyalty, which we know is a problem in terms of the quality of the organization.
We did a whole segment about it at 3 o'clock talking about Lonzo Ball.
Yeah, we did, didn't we? Right? I mean, and there's myriad examples from Randy Brown ending up back on the staff, from Scottie Pippen ending up an ambassador. Like, there's so many examples of that kind of thing. And it's been a problem. And there's all of that. And there's also, you know, mixed in with all of the money making and the cash grabbing, is this dream of leaving something good behind. I talked to sources who knew Jerry and know Jerry very well around the time of the stadium getting suggested, Lawrence, at the 78 over there near Roosevelt and Canal. And there is a true portion of Jerry Reinsdorf's makeup that wants to leave the White Sox in a good place with a new stadium for 30 years or 40 years beyond when he dies. He absolutely does want and dreams of leaving that as a legacy. And so he still wants to do that. Whether that happens or not is up to like state politics and city politics and the country's appetite for public money. And maybe it will never happen. But I know that there is part of him that really wants to leave that. It is a complicated dude. But he's going to explore all his options. And I'm sure there's family pressure mixed in to just maximize the money. And there's also all the personal pressures of might as well get out clean if you can get out clean. This is not an easy situation. And I believe that Jerry Reinsdorf's obituary ought to be a book or three. And it will be a complicated one.
Agreed. I have reached out to a bunch of people over the last 20 minutes. And two people who would know way better than I reached back when I sent the story to them. One source said, I would be stunned, meaning would be stunned if this is true.
Mm-hmm.
Another source, and I have to do a little editing here on the fly, makes zero sense to me based upon decades of knowing the plan. And this doesn't make sense. Stu is tight with Tony, which is the only possible smoke here.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and that's interesting. It's good stuff. I mean, we're both like texting and reaching out and trying to further this story because there are a lot of possible angles here. I mean, to take it on its face, to take this news on its face, is to believe that Jerry at 89 is finally bending to the idea that this makes the most sense to go ahead and sell now.
Or maybe he's just tired. There could just be if this were true, maybe the part that is true is like, I'm trying to do a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
It looks like I'm being pushed back at every turn. I'm being pushed back by the governor.
Correct.
I'm being pushed back by fans. I'm being pushed back by people who are trying to plan this in the city.
Pushed back by Comcast.
I'm being pushed back by Comcast. I'm being pushed back by the baseball people that I hired because they're doing things in a very different way than maybe I think. So, and maybe you just go, you know what? I've had enough. Let's sell this thing and then I'm going to be done with that part of it.
Yeah, like the baseball people are telling him, analytics, 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 by
the way.
He's
saying Eddie Stanky.
Correct. Correct. Like in his soul, he's trying to turn the White Sox into a successful version of the Brooklyn Dodgers team that left him behind. And his modern baseball people are saying, that doesn't work anymore. We don't need 26 of me. I'm Chris Getz, remember?
David Eckstein.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, it could all add up to a man who is tired and is saying it is time.
Well, here's another thing I wonder, mm-hmm. and you would probably know better than I would, Speaks. Is there a race to Nashville? And can that be exploited if you're an owner that's thinking about selling your team instead of you actually relocating it? Is the better business move to sell it because everyone wants to plant their flag in Nashville?
It's a great question. I don't know the national and Major League Baseball angles on Nashville specifically enough to give you an authoritative answer. So it's a great question because that could speak to Dave Stewart's group wanting some leverage of getting this story out there. And Jerry trying to race to give Dave Stewart a viable team to sell. I do know this, that when you go back to the very beginnings of the stadium story that came out, you know, a year ago, 8 months ago, whenever it was, Nashville was the leverage, the Nashville leverage. Jerry going down there and meeting with the mayor, right? Like the whole idea, if you don't give
being seen.
Yes. If you don't give me a new stadium, I'm going to go ahead and do it. I'm going to go ahead and get this done. So now this entire thing, it's on the table that this is all a leverage play.
A work.
Using Nashville, as always, and using the Dave Stewart group as, I don't even have to go through the hassle of moving it. I'll just sell it, and they'll do it if you don't give me my stadium.
They'll move it. I do think it's interesting because someone mentioned, well, is this a way for them to get a new stadium here? Similarly to the situation
what I'm saying.
With Comcast, I would go, this is the worst time for you to think that you have leverage enough to make something go.
Well, remember where we are. We're in a race against the Bears that the Bears have pulled out in front of. We're in a race against the Bears for this loophole about stadium funding that expires at the end of the year. And they both might lose, but they certainly are racing against each other.
They are, but similarly to when we have the discussion about the Bears, it's probably even more important to point out the stark difference in the political climate now versus 1988. Back then, you had a mayor who was a staunch White Sox fan. Back then, you had a governor who was a staunch White Sox fan and may have moved the clocks back 5 minutes to allow for funding of a stadium that ended up getting built.
Folks, if you don't know that, that is a real story.
And yeah, I'm not making that up.
One of Illinois' most incredible legal absurdities.
Yes, incredibly problematic, too, for a lot of different reasons. That's not the climate that we're in. We're in a climate now where, forget about the governor's fandom, he is a Cubs fan. But even if you go beyond that,
this statement,
he has been very clear about public money for private enterprise.
I know.
The mayor of Chicago is a meatball Cub fan. Like, the way Lori Lightfoot was about the Bears is the way that Brandon Johnson is about the Cubs.
Is he even back from London?
He's doing business.
No, he's doing business, Speaks. He's bringing business back.
Didn't you see the business that he was doing?
He did bring home a Bears win. We got to give him credit for that. I mean, he did a hell of a job.
I'd let JB buy the White Sox.
Well, he'd be one of the people that had enough cash to do it.
He could do it.
That's pocket change, man. How many Walgreens do you need to sell to make that happen?
Although I'm a Cubs fan first and foremost. Sorry for all the White Sox fans.
The guy is the heir to Hyatt Hotels.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
There's Walgreens too, right? Do I have that correct?
I'm not sure. He is the sole heir to the Hyatt Hotel franchise.
I mean,
buy the White Sox, brother.
They have a pretty big portfolio, the Pritzkers.
Yeah. He owns this building.
Yeah. They have a nice portfolio. And he's also the governor of the state.
Yeah, Hyatt Hotels.
You'd probably be better off if you were the Bears or the White Sox asking JB for a personal loan than asking for the money from the state.
He might be open to that. Yeah. that's a great point. Is
this
point.
The worst time in history to buy a baseball team?
it's a great question. The way that the RSN business
Everything,
has crumbled.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's still a profitable league.
No, Bill DeWitt says it's not. Yeah. So I believe when owners tell me how profitable their business is.
It's still profitable. Biblical. It's profitable in terms of franchise value. I think there's nuance there. When Bill DeWitt says that, you know, like year to year in terms of actually making money, that's actually factually true in terms of year to year and your bottom line.
The industry isn't very profitable, to be quite honest.
But over the course of like 10 years, you could make a billion, you know,
which
is nice.
Considering that you bought the team for $20 million.
Right. But you can't spend money based on franchise value.
Correct. You get the franchise value by selling the team.
Man.
There's a lot of things this can be. The responses that I got from my sources makes me feel like it's a little fugazi, but who knows? Who knows?
I like fugazi.
Good band.
What does the actual term mean? I don't even know.
Like a ghost, a myth. It's nothing.
I should know. I'm ashamed that I don't know that. That's what he's one.
Don't be ashamed.
No, I'm ashamed about a lot of stuff.
We're about learning here.
No, and I'm ashamed about a lot of stuff.
Are you ashamed because you don't know about the future?
I don't know anything about the future.
Then how are we going to talk about this in the next segment?
We can do it. Let's keep reaching out to sources and further the story. We can open the phone lines, too, if we want.
Sure, why not? Let's hear from White Sox fans about this, if you wish. 312-644-6767. The headline reads, Jerry Reinsdorf open to selling the White Sox. You believe that? Spiegel and Holmes here with you until 6 on the Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
I definitely listened to 6-7 the Score growing up for sure. Driving around in the car with my dad, you'd always have it on.
Afternoons on the Score.
Give it to somebody that don't know any better because that's a fugazi. All right?
That's a fugazi? How do you know it's a fugazi? You looked at it for 2 seconds.
What? It's a fake.
But, yeah, I know what a fugazi is.
Tanny's the best.
Here's
Fugazi into Fugazi.
So good.
It's outrageous.
We are talking about, if you're just joining us, first of all, welcome. This is the Spiegel and Holmes Show. New story broke in The Athletic. Britt Garoli had the story. The headline reads, Jerry Reinsdorf open to selling White Sox, according to her sources. We've reached out to sources, and sources have gotten back to us and said, that doesn't seem quite right.
Yeah, I got some more stuff back during the break, and I'm going to go ahead and say that this feels to me like both sides benefiting from the leverage possibilities of this story.
It elevates Dave Stewart.
Correct. Dave Stewart has been trying very hard to get baseball to Nashville. Nashville likely the next city whenever it happens, whether it's going to be expansion or a team moving. He was trying to do that with Oakland. Now he's trying to do it here. This keeps him and his group in the news, perhaps over other Nashville options. And for Jerry, it's back to the original leverage idea of, I could just take my team to Nashville if you don't give me a stadium I want. You know what I mean? So this has the feel right now of benefiting both sides to have the story out there.
Yeah, if we hear any more, we will definitely pass it along. We do want to get your reaction to what you've already heard or read, and we thank you for your patronage here. 312-644-6767 is the number. Let's go to Westmont and talk with Tom. Hey, Tom, you're on the Score.
Hey, guys. I've been sitting in the waiting room. Fugazi, that was awesome. Thanks for playing that song.
You got it.
I'm thinking Jerry Reinsdorf is a deal guy. He's a finance guy, and he would be selling the White Sox low. So count me skeptical. Just goes against the grain of the business approach that he's had forever.
But he's 89, and there's all sorts of human reasons to believe that things might have changed. But we haven't seen anything other than this story so far to represent a definitive change.
Yeah, that's it's very possible. As when you're talking about, what do you call it, rich hobbyist?
Yeah.
it's very possible that in a moment of I'm tired of all of this, that Jerry was like, yeah, if the right deal came along, I'd consider it.
Especially to my friend Dave.
That doesn't mean that he's actively trying to sell the team.
Sure. That's why it could possibly benefit Dave. He's open to it.
Absolutely. Where your name gets elevated into the discussion of minority ownership in baseball, which is a big deal. And probably a big deal to Jerry at some level of his being. Like, that's a big deal to him. The timing of this is a little weird to me, considering if ever there was a sell low point.
You just lost 121 games. You're the laughingstock of baseball. Every national writer worth their salt came to town hoping to see you break the record and wrote a long think piece about what a disaster you have been. It's a pretty low point. No, that's fair. And it's also 2 days after the Pollad family rumors are out there that they're going to sell the Twins, which I mentioned the other day. So you want to buy the Twins or would you want to buy the White Sox?
Me personally, I'd buy the White Sox, but you know, it's bleep the Twins forever. The I-88 corridor by the Topgolf. Hey, Jim, you're on the score.
Hey guys, loving the new show, loving the new lineup in the afternoon and middays.
Thank you.
Spiegs, you just said to correct, you said the Pollad rumor. It's not a rumor. They said they're looking to sell the team,
right.
So
yes.
That's on the market. It's on the market. But baseball is going to expand, right? They're going to expand by two teams in the next few years, and they're going to charge what, $3 billion, $4 billion for an expansion fee? I mean, Las Vegas got a hockey team for $1 billion, and 5 years later, Seattle had to pay $2 billion for their team in the NHL. They're not going to – I don't think Major League Baseball, the other owners, would let anybody move to Nashville or Portland or Indianapolis or Charlotte when they're going to be splitting up $8 billion between the 30 teams in a couple, 3-5 years. So I don't think the White Sox really have any leverage about saying we're going to Nashville, because I don't think the Steinbrenner family is going to give up their cut of $8 billion in expansion fees.
Fair point. I mean, I actually was listening to some people talk about that as it pertains to Seattle getting a basketball team back, where the expansion team is going to cost you more than it would have cost you to keep the team there in the first place in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a fair point. I appreciate you giving that to the show.
Yeah, for sure. And knowing what the national landscape is, what the commissioner's office thinks about the possibility of an expansion team or Nashville in any other form is definitely something we should further.
Let's go out to Hyde Park and talk with Mario. Hey, Mario, you're on the score.
Hey, fellas, how you doing?
We're good, Mario.
Word. The Jerry Reinsdorf is Ben's Auto Sales on 7600 Western. He ain't selling nothing, number one. Number two, even if he wanted to sell it today, Stuart, MLB still has to approve a sale. They're not going to let the White Sox just bounce out of Chicago for the reasons the previous caller said. And show sounds great. You guys sound good together. Everything seems to be going along just fine. And stop. Jerry, just sell it. You should have sold it when you were 80. Sell it.
How much room is there over by Ben's Auto Sales? Could they do a stadium over
not
there?
Much. Not probably not, but who cares? Put it on Western. Put it in the lake. Who cares anymore?
I mean, there should be room. Is it the old Quigley campus over there?
Sure.
Yeah, listen, they got room.
They lost 214 games in 2 years. Sell it.
Mario, thank you as always. That's
put it on the water.
There are a lot of people who agree with Mario in that regard. We're seeing some of it come in via the Twitch stream and folks on the text line. I do think that there are a lot of people that are just kind of done with the White Sox overall. And it sucks, and it hurts.
Can I say something about the news angle of this?
Sure.
We learned along the way that some writers are leak receptacles, right? Like the leak receptacle of choice for certain franchises and such. I don't have that knowledge institutionally of this particular writer or The Athletic in general being used that way. I think Kenny Rosenthal has proven himself to be an incredibly reliable kingpin of that baseball division. And some of the other people that they have used that he has collaborated with are extremely trustworthy in my own journalistic eye. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. When you think about the levels at the Athletic of editorial review that you would probably have to go through, especially with them being connected with the New York Times,
right?
You would say, well, they're not just going to just throw something out there.
Yeah.
But I do think it's interesting that one of my sources was at least seemingly completely off guard when I sent the story, and the other source quickly retorted, that doesn't really make sense, considering what things have been and what Jerry has expressed about what his plans are.
I had one source that offered the same, like what you're talking about, and then I had another source who said that people close to Jerry who are sympathetic toward him wonder why he hasn't already sold.
I believe that. I believe that there are plenty of people who care about Jerry Reinsdorf that have probably said,
sell the team, dude.
You don't need this.
Get out of this. He said that himself, didn't he? You know?
You don't need any. Shane?
I don't play golf. I don't
Tanny, do stuff. You guys are resident White Sox fans. What do you think?
Well, I mean, Britt Garoli is not a White Sox mouthpiece like someone like Bob Nightingale is. And I think that's what you were getting to, Speaks. She wouldn't just put this out there as a way to help Jerry. She was part of the piece that Ken Rosenthal wrote that absolutely dismantled the White Sox when they said that Jerry thinks he knows everything.
Mm-hmm.
She was part of that piece. She's not putting this out there to help the White Sox. This is not like that. So I know some people might be,
I'm not trying to look. I don't know Britt at all. I have friends that know her and know her work. It may not be something that to help the White Sox, but let me just,
it might be someone
what
buying
I'm saying
it.
Is I trust it. And I trust her in this way.
I don't have any way to judge, but in a neutral example, someone isn't necessarily trying to help that team or that owner, but they are trying to help their own status in their own career because they're breaking a major story about, you know what I mean? So there are motivations that can be beyond helping a particular owner or team. It can also be like, oh, I've got some scoopage. Let me get the scoopage out there. And
I get that.
And I'm not saying that that's what's happening here. I don't know, and I don't want to besmirch her reputation at all as a reporter. I'm just saying that it's not as binary as wanting to help the team sometimes when news gets out.
I just don't want to put her in the Bob Nightingale bucket.
No, I agree.
Is what I'm saying.
I agree,
but the media literacy point that Lawrence makes about, you know, the different threshold is a good one.
We need to take a break. When we come back, we'll get back on Bears. Mark Grody will join us to discuss it. If you want to keep discussing it via text or the Twitch stream, you are more than welcome to. Stick around. Spiegel and Holmes here with you until 6 on The Score.